Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, for decades, despite the United States' own claim of wanting to help with stability and security in the world, the reality on the ground seems to be quite different. For example, in West Asia, we see prime examples from Afghanistan to Syria to Iraq and beyond of Washington wreaking havoc either directly or via its proxies in the region. Why is this the case? Is it more profitable for Washington to destroy than to build? Well, we're going to take a look at all of this on this hour's debate.
In his latest remarks, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has slammed the Western powers for bringing chaos across the world, especially the West Asia region. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said hegemonic powers led by the United States trigger domestic wars, provoke acts of terrorism, and fuel regional conflicts to secure their own interests. Ayatollah Khamenei said some regional countries unfortunately help those powers in their plots. He further said Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon are examples of the failure of Washington's conspiracies in the region.
This is what they do. They create chaos in order to serve their own purpose. And it's not a secret anymore. Everybody can see it. And so, countries like Iran and Lebanon and Syria and Iraq, they really have to be very, very vigilant.
The United States invaded Afghanistan in 2001 under the pretext of bringing peace and stability to the country. But facts on the ground show that the situation has gravely deteriorated since then. 2 years after that, Washington brought up another issue to justify its war on Iraq: weapons of mass destruction. But after all these years, there's still no single evidence to prove any such weapon was ever found in the war-torn country. Following many condemnations over the two previous invasions, Washington changed its tactics. It decided to stay away from direct engagement and instead boost its agenda through supporting extremist groups. The war on Syria is an example. It started in 2011 and was triggered by domestic terror groups with strong support from the US and its allies. The United States, Britain, and France provided extremist groups with weapons and money to overthrow the Syrian government. Western countries also carried out a number of airstrikes on what they claimed to be military targets, but most of the victims to the air raids were civilians. The Syrian army now controls most parts of the country, despite the West's hard efforts to topple the government in Damascus.
The U.S. is a serial psyops disruptor of the Middle East, and it does it for the obvious reasons that it wants its bases, its military bases in the area. It wants to extract the resources from that region. That's why they also need the military bases to make sure that they secure their asset.
The 2015 war in Yemen, waged by Saudi Arabia, is another instance of creating insecurity and instability in the region. The military operation that was given a green light by Washington has claimed nearly 15,000 Yemeni lives and turned the country into a pile of ruins. But Yemeni fighters are still resisting. People in Palestine are also still fighting against the Israeli regime for decades, regardless of the U.S. continued support for Israel and the international community's indifference to the killing and the suffering of the Palestinians. Western powers have failed in expanding their control over the Middle East. But despite that, they keep selling arms and ammunition to their regional allies, hoping someday their dream would come true.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of New York, journalist and political commentator, Ms. Maxine Dover, and out of London, senior analyst and researcher, Al Bayan Center for Planning, Ms. Catherine Jacquem. Thank you both for being with us. Starting this off in New York, and Maxine, do you think that the United States has been behind a lot of chaos or unrest in the world, but especially in West Asia?
You know, I am going to negate your premise. The idea that the United States is a fomenter of chaos is not one that I will accept. On the contrary, the presence, for example, in Lebanon, the presence of an organization like Hezbollah, which is funded as a proxy for many say for the Iranian regime, has destroyed or significantly changed a country that was a bastion of beauty, of civilization, a continuation of a centuries-old cultural base for the Lebanese people. That doesn't exist anymore. There is fighting, there is the Hezbollah's takeover, there was an assassination of a prime minister. That was not the Lebanese style. The Lebanese style was democracy. In Syria, the rebellion was by the people. The United States has stayed pretty much out of the Syrian crisis, as it should, but the crisis has not been without helpers, and those helpers are Russia and Iran, which has destroyed the real attempts at democracy by the people who've rebelled against the Assad regime. The Assad regime is a regime of 15% of the people who are members of the Ba'ath Party, going against 85%. But that 15% have ruled with a very strong iron hand. So the idea that chaos is fomented by the United States is not one that I will accept.
Okay. Well, let me get Catherine in on this discussion. Well, Catherine, you've heard our guest out of New York. For example, why don't we take a look at what Maxine has said when she talked about Lebanon and how entities like Hezbollah has actually changed this, as opposed to the United States creating chaos there. There would be some that would say actually the Israeli occupation that was supported by the United States caused a lot of harm and, of course, the war in Lebanon for years. But go ahead, Catherine, your take.
Well, I'm going to say, first of all, that I don't think I live in the same plane of reality as your guest in New York, because I see things very differently indeed. The mention of Hezbollah, again, I'm not surprised that we jumped really, really quickly to Lebanon and Hezbollah, because why not deflect when we cannot answer a question? The very existence of Hezbollah is rooted in the act of resistance against a foreign oppression. And this foreign oppression was manifested into two entities, Israel, directly through military action, and of course, the United States of America by supporting militarily and financially Israel's actions in the Middle East, and in this case, directly Lebanon. So to say that Hezbollah changed the face of Lebanon and its characteristic, I completely agree. However, I disagree in the nature of that change, is that it was positive. If anything, I think that Hezbollah allowed for Lebanon to transcend the many differences that existed, whether they were ethnic differences or sectarian differences, so that Lebanese could actually find themselves within their sovereignty and define what it is to be Lebanese. As for a takeover by Hezbollah of Lebanon and Lebanon's institutions, absolutely, it's actually a fallacy. If anything, Hezbollah has maintained that it refused systematically to actually take over Lebanon when it could have. And some actually argue that it should have, for the sake actually of pluralism, because Hezbollah did not want to imprint its own vision, on a population and turn the debate into a sectarian debate. So in order to avoid this and actually respect democracy, Hezbollah declined. So what they do is they actually, part of the government. Why shouldn't they, since they represent a fair share of the population? And after all, democracy is about representing the will of the people, unless I'm mistaken, of course.
Well, Catherine, the premise itself, of course, and talking about the United States actually wreaking havoc in Western Asia, your take on that side of things. Go ahead.
I agree. Of course, it is wreaking havoc. We have to understand something very simple about the United States of America, is that America wants to rule. America wants to have a very narrow narrative as to what history, what politics should look like, in the sense that America has to be sitting in the center of the world, and everything has to revolve around America, center and America's wishes. So everything that America has done has been aggressive and belligerent towards nations, because it wants to force people to follow a certain narrative. And you can see the results of it. I mean, wars have been fought, nuclear bombs have been dropped on two nations, and yet America still wants to hold on to this, you know, fallacious title of, you know, a defender of the free world. Okay. It's simply not true. History tells you different.
All right, what about that, Maxine? Go ahead, you were about to say something.
Well, I think you're talking a bit of a fallacy here. The atomic bomb was dropped at the end of a very, very long war. That was a war of democracy against imperialism and fascism. To bring up the dropping of an atomic bomb in the discussion of what is going on in Lebanon, ask a Lebanese Christian what's going on in Lebanon and how his country or her country has changed.
Well let's take it. We're not talking about that. You said as far as Japan. We're not going to even deal with Japan now, Maxine, or even Lebanon. We can look at, let's look from 2001 on. We can look at, we have many examples. We have Iraq. We have Syria. We have Afghanistan. Let's look at that. If we start looking at it, for example, and of course we have the situation that's taking place in the occupied Palestinian territories. Let's look at this year. We won't even go that far, Maxine, when U.S. President Donald Trump decided
Let's go just a little bit before. Let's go just a year or two before 2000. Let's look at Oslo. Let's look at the hopes for peace and settlement that were
if we go before 2000,
begun
good
at
point.
Oslo.
If we go before 2000, Maxine, we go to the 90s. We go to Daddy Bush and what he did in Iraq. You want to go to the 90s or where do we go, Maxine? Because we have many, many examples. So what I was getting at was this year and what has happened in the occupied territories just with one decision by U.S. President Donald Trump right now. We have seen, since he's made the decision to say that the capital of Israel is Jerusalem, just from that time on in March, we have seen the increase in the number of people who have been killed, number of Palestinians who have been killed and injured in the occupied territories. Does the United States have anything to do with that at all?
Let's go to the way that sentence came back. Let's go to the way that statement was made. When the Trump administration declared that Jerusalem is the recognized and legitimate capital of Israel, it was simply modernizing an historic fact. Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. What the Trump statement did not do was limit the presence of one people to Jerusalem. It certainly left the door open for a settlement that might include East Jerusalem, which is the area that holds the majority of the Palestinian population in the city, as a possible capital. But in order to get to that point, you've got to sit down, and the two parties, the Palestinian Authority and Israel, have to sit with one another face to face.
Maxine, it just was not a statement. Excuse me. It was just not a statement, Maxine. They actually opened the embassy there and made the situation extremely volatile. So
that's correct.
Why would you make something volatile and then all of a sudden then want to talk to the party? Why not try to talk prior to that?
I think trying to talk prior to that has been tried. This was one way of not limiting Jerusalem's use as a capital, one for Israel and one possible for the Palestinian state that will be established, but rather making that issue no longer the one that would end talks, but rather would be an issue decided.
All right,
so
Catherine, your take on the Palestinian situation.
If one looks at what has been offered to the Palestinian Authority. Yeah.
Maxine, stay with me. Go ahead, Catherine.
One will see
sick and tired of hearing the same arguments coming out of, you know, not just New York, but I mean, it's always the same thing whenever we discuss Palestine and Israel. And, you know, Israelis have a tendency to just, you know, all go over and over about the same thing, the same point that they're actually arguing. There is no point. there is no point to be had. It's very clear. I mean, you can. I mean, if you have eyes to see, you can see that, you know, there is a great degree of discrepancy in between, you know, the level of violence that is exerted by Israel against the Palestinians and Palestinians trying to, you know, to defend themselves and the little left that they have, you know, of Palestine, because everything has been eaten away. Everything that Donald Trump has done so far, you know, has been commended and engineered back in Tel Aviv, you know, by Benjamin Netanyahu, trying actually to, number one, make sure that Palestinians, you know, will be left hopeless because everything would be taken away from them. Number two, to ensure, you know, that Palestinians would react rather violently because they have nothing else to do and they have no other, you know, way to actually express their despair. And it's actually rather disgusting, you know, that the world is actually quite capable of stomaching this kind of despair and not do anything about it. And third of all, there's always this argument that somehow Israel is better because it is Israel. And I'm actually sick of it. I don't think that any one person is any better than any other person. And the claim that Israel has, you know, that God gave it to them is just not good enough. You cannot bring God, you know, to a tribunal and actually argue this argument. It's a non-argument. You can't continue to do this and still kill, you know, keep calling Israel some kind of a secular democracy. It's either one or the other. You can't have it both ways. And I'm sorry to say, but for you to consider that Palestinians, you know, are the one who are the problems and at the same time the victims and at the same time they're the one, you know, creating violence is just fallacious. Again, it's completely hypocritical. It's actually criminal and it's disingenuous. Okay. You cannot do this. You cannot sit in New York and tell me that they're on the same level. Palestinians are fighting for their lives and Israelis are trying to obliterate them. It's quite simple.
Maxine, we know about former U.S. General Wesley Carkin admitting in 2001 that the U.S. planned on taking out 7 countries in 5 years. Doesn't this show to you that the U.S. actually behaves as a rogue state and wants to do basically whatever it wants to do in the world when it comes to aggressive acts?
Well, let me just go to Catherine's statement for a moment. Let's leave God out of this for this conversation. Let's go to the UN. Let's go to international declarations, which, had they been accepted by both sides, would have resulted in a Palestinian state from 1948. The fact is that the Arab side, did not accept that Israel could have any state and attacked the fledgling state before it was even declared or as it was being declared. Had the UN declarations been observed and accepted by both sides, we wouldn't have this discussion. We'd probably have discussions about exchange of academics or exchange of medicine.
Instead, okay, let me let Catherine quickly respond, and then we're getting back to the topic at hand. Actually, it is the United States. Go, Catherine, 1 minute. Go ahead.
To be quite honest with you, I'm actually not interested in hearing Maxine's, thoughts on Israel and Palestine. I think quite clearly we're sitting on very different sides of the river, and I'm quite happy sitting on mine, not changing my mind. So I actually have no interest in arguing this because we're not actually debating this today. We're supposed to be debating the U.S. And military interventionism, and we're not. Once again, we're trying to Maxine is trying to deflect away from the issue by talking about her favorite issue, which is Israel and the defense of Zionism. I'm not interested in engaging.
Okay, and so let me get back to Maxine. Maxine, the question at hand, go ahead.
The question at hand is whether or not, as I understand the question, whether or not the U.S. is trying to exert influence.
No. The question at hand, I gave you an example. I talked about U.S. General Wesley Clark and the 7 countries in 5 years that he said that the U.S. said that they were going to take out. Isn't that an example of a rogue state?
If that was the statement, then it's not one that speaks well of democracy. I have not seen the statement, so I can't really respond to that
statement.
I'll
send you links after the show. Let me know, because it's all over. And you have the video also. The point is that actually the attempts were made. We look at the countries and we look at what has happened since 2001 and the countries that were mentioned there, and all of them have been attacked in some way. There have been a couple, like Iran, of course, that has been able to stay on top of everything
everything, but we look at what has happened in Iraq, we look at Afghanistan, we look at Syria, we look at so many other countries and what has happened, and obviously that there has been a plan because these countries have been basically destroyed or are in upheaval. Who is going to answer for this, Maxine? You say that you haven't seen it, but of course you have seen what has happened in Iraq. We know that George W. Bush and his excuse of WMDs and, oh, okay, so they weren't found. And of course we saw after 9/11 attacks that allegedly 17 out of the 19 hijackers were Saudi, but then the United States they decide to go into Iraq. So what does this mean?
Look, the Bush actions have the question that you've raised. Why go into Iraq, and what was the purpose of the war? But that's not going to be a discussion that can be had in a short period of moments. The Bush actions had set up a very difficult and very disastrous war, there's no question of that, for all sides. The question is how to bring that to a more positive future and not to look at only the past. The
okay,
past
let me get Catherine in on this, because Catherine, you've just heard what Maxine said. You've just heard what Maxine said.
I'm actually quite confused.
It's Bush or Obama or Trump, it's basically the same policy that the United States is implementing each time. What is it going to take, Catherine? Who's going to pay for all of this death and destruction, whether we're talking about Iraq or Syria? Who's going to pay for it? What needs to be done?
Well, I think the people will always pay for it. But what I find interesting is that suddenly, you know, Maxine just admitted that Iraq's war was quite disastrous, and yet, you know, prior to your first question at the beginning of the show, she was saying that America is not responsible for anything but promoting democracy. So which one is it? I'm getting really confused. Is it a catastrophe or is it a promoter of democracy? We're not quite sure anymore. As for, you know, to hold America accountable would be a feat that I would like to see. It's going to be very difficult because, again, they have weaved a narrative, always blaming the victim, saying that there's always a good reason, you know, for going to war against a country. They always, you know, start with the media narrative and, you know, holding a very specific rhetoric, and then they go about militarizing the issue. I mean, we've seen it with Afghanistan, we've seen it with Iraq, we've seen this with Syria. There is always a good reason why America should get involved.
All right, and I would love to continue this, but unfortunately we're out of time. Appreciate Catherine Shachtman, senior analyst and researcher, Al Bayan Center for Planning out of London, Maxine Dover, journalist and political commentator out of New York, being with us. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us. Hopefully we'll see you same time tomorrow. I'm Marzia Hashimi. See you next time.